Then Quisenberry versus Renton School District.
May it please the Court, I'm Eric Stahlfeld, representing appellants Robin Jones and Rosemary Quisenberry. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The City of Renton, in its response brief at page 14.
School District Renton.
In its response brief, talking about South Tacoma Way case, said that because the government had statutory authority to sell surplus property, and because the government did not violate the purpose of the notice requirement, the court held that the government's failure to comply with statutory notice requirements did not invalidate the contract or impair its enforceability. That is the legal explanation for precisely what South Tacoma Way did. That is not what the Superior Court in this case did when it dismissed this case on summary judgment. And in that case, the court committed error or erred.
With regard to the purpose of this statute, 28A335120, parties seem to disagree a little bit about the purpose. But I have a threshold question. Without a legislative declaration, how does a court determine what the purpose of the statute is? Is it a matter of statutory construction or case law, or how would we do that?
Well, this is a case of first impression, so there's not going to be any case law that you can look at in this case.
But just in general,
I know I took a look and I tried to find any legislative history within what the legislature said, and I did not find any. So at this point, the only way one can take a look at that is to look at what the language said in the 1979 amendment, where the legislature committed this extraordinarily substantive change in how school districts were permitted to dispose of surplus property. And the purpose...
Is there any history that informs us as to why the legislature made this kind of change? I mean, either newspapers or school district newsletters, that sort of thing.
Your Honor, I could not find that, and I actually know one of the legislators who voted on this, and he didn't remember it either. So it was one of the sessions where
resistant to having decisions they have the right to make being taken away from.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Your Honor.
I say voters are generally resistant to having decisions that they get to make taken away from them. So usually there's some driving force for it. And I'm curious.
I don't know.
No footprint in the sand about why this happened.
No, there's not. But I think that goes to Judge Trickey's question about what was the purpose here. And at the same time, the right was taken away from the voters. The court said, yes, there will be this hearing, and they went through the process, and it's a little specific. It's you have to provide two notices, you have to provide them in the same area, and you have to have the hearing. And this language is not quite unique. It also applies to hospital districts. You have to, and those were the only two places I could find where the language is there, but you have to admit evidence offered for and against the propriety and advisability of the sale. Well, what does propriety mean? Is this proper in the first place? The voters, when they go into the voting booth, could take a look at this and say, you know, it may make all the sense in the world, but I just simply want to keep this land in school district rather than selling it to somebody else.
It seems like the legislature made the policy decision that if the voters or the residents of the school district have a problem with the decision, after being heard, the only remedy would be to change the people on the school board as opposed to voting the decision of the board up or down in a special election. For whatever reason, that seems to be the decision.
provided the school board did actually view themselves as being in the place of the voters and actually legitimately consider the evidence of the voters saying this is what we would like to do or what we would like not to do.
With regard to the South Tacoma Wade case, the Supreme Court there talks about ultra vires, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I'm never sure. You got procedural and you got substantive. Do we read the case as saying if it's procedural, ultra vires, we can't invalidate the action? Because isn't that what this is? Isn't this case is they didn't follow the procedure. They clearly, I mean, I suppose we're going to hear a different argument from the district, but it seems to me you have the argument and you've made it that they didn't follow the procedure. So, but is that a basis under the South Tacoma way to set aside the sale? Because isn't that what we'd in effect be doing?
Okay. Ultra-vires is actually, and I cited the case in the brief, is used extremely loosely in a lot of different contexts.
Right.
In South Tacoma Way, the issue came up because the party seeking to set aside the sale had to rely on an equitable doctrine, the good faith purchaser for value, to say, you know, this is why I should be entitled to rely on the deed that I obtained. We don't have a deed in this case, so we're a little bit different on that. But you needed the good faith purchaser. And one of the purposes of the ultra vires doctrine is that when you're making that equitable argument, good faith purchaser for value, if it is ultra vires, you can't make equitable arguments. So that was why the case in that case was trying to say this is ultra vires in a complete, absolute, total sense. It did not really apply to whether or not it's procedural or substantive. If it is ultra vires, in that sense of the traditional doctrine from probably 80 or 100 years ago, then we don't take a look at equitable arguments. Okay. So in this case, it's not so much a, is it ultra vires or is it not ultra vires? I mean, if you take a look at Noel v. Court, Cole, the court suggested it was also ultra vires, even though that was purely a procedural argument as well.
Well, is this a procedural argument, however we cast it, that the procedure wasn't followed? Or is there some substantive component?
At this point, the process here is purely procedure. The substance might be whether or not the hearing was valid, but this case was cut short of that by the summary judgment ruling. So at this point, yes.
So you think there were material questions of fact as to whether or not there was the appropriate procedure was followed? I don't remember reading that in the brief.
No, the substantive question would be whether or not at the second hearing there was a proper.
Purely legal question. There's no dispute about the facts. One notice was in one newspaper, one was in another newspaper. Purchase and sale agreement signed, they decide they need to publish the same notice in the same newspaper twice, they have a second meeting, and the purchase and sale agreement is ratified. And your argument is they didn't give the notice that was required before they signed the purchase and sale agreement, and they can't fix it by having a second hearing after the purchase and sale agreement is signed.
Well, we aren't at the point, we aren't at the point yet where that second argument has been made. I don't know, because we haven't gone through the facts, whether or not, and the school board did not argue in its second summary judgment that the second hearing fixed any errors in the first.
And we need to decide that as well, because if it did, why would we send it back?
Well, to allow the normal process to go and take a look whether or not there was.
The facts aren't disputed.
I think those facts very well may be disputed. I mean, we start at this point in the reply. Apologies. I'd just like to finish this up. We did say that the discovery was just begun. We have not looked into the discovery on those matters.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Donna Barnett, representing the Renton School District. And I think we started off the discussion with the important part of why are we going to legislative history and what does the policy mean? The district contends that we don't need to get there. We don't get there. South Tacoma and Lane probably is actually more on point because it had to deal with the same arguments here that there was a purchase and sale agreement, there was a procedural requirement that was not complied with, and then the error was after the closing of the sale. So, and then they said, okay, there the error was after the closing of the sale, and there, and this is Lane, the board had to find reasonableness and issue a resolution regarding the reasonableness of a sale of BNSF property. There they acknowledged, yes, there was noncompliance with the statute. The first question is, was that a procedural error or substantive? Procedural, just like we agree here, it was a procedural error. When did that occur? Well, the resolution was signed after the closing of the sale. So, yes, that's clear nonconformity. Therefore, now we need to get to the policy. Was that error, that clear nonconformity with the statute, did that violate the policy and did that violate the statute? We don't get to that question here because the state cured its problem, cured the minor procedural error, and the sale has still not closed.
How is the procedural error cured if the agreement was actually signed? The statute says proposes a sale.
Right, and you have to have a sale in mind in order to propose it. The temporal requirement is that you don't close the sale, you don't complete the sale, you don't have the sale, S-A-L-E, until 45 days after the date of the publishing in the newspaper.
So you're saying that 2 and 3 have to be read together?
Right. The first
but,
is the...
But 3 talks about surplus real property and 2 does not.
Well, even if it's not, I'm sorry, you don't have to read them together. No. I'm saying the requirement for the notice is to receive evidence regarding the proposed sale.
Suppose you received something at the second hearing after the purchase mm-hmm. and sale agreement has been signed and the board becomes persuaded that, you know, this is not such a great deal after all.
Right.
We shouldn't do it. Is there a way for you now to change that decision, to get out of the
Absolutely, and in fact, there are affirmative steps that both parties must take in order to close the sale, and sure, the district.
Is there language in the purchase and sale agreement that relieves the school district from its obligation to sell if the board approval is not obtained at a properly convened notice hearing?
Not specifically those words. There are conditions precedent, but not board approval. They would end up.
Which would you point to in the purchase and sale agreement that would relieve the district from any liability if the district at the second meeting had said this isn't such a good idea, we want to approve it?
I don't think they would be relieved of liability. I do think that they would be liable for breach of contract, but that doesn't mean the sale occurred. And that's what the statute says. The statute does not say, and no matter how much the appellants. That's a great question because that goes to whether the
you would
have to look to see if the district had authority to enter into the sale in the first place. And that's the ultra vires question where we got does the school district have general authority to sell the property? Yes, they do. And that was looked at in Tacoma and Lane. Yes, they do. Then okay, what is the error? It's procedural. Right.
Qualified general authority subject to procedural requirements being satisfied.
Well, I interpret that as there are that is the condition that it's not a conditional. Those are the requirements that need to be set forth when they're exercising their authority. And here they cured that. There is no noncompliance with the statute. Because they held a hearing, they published it correctly, and they haven't sold yet.
Is it really a meaningful hearing, though? I mean, if the sale is already a foregone conclusion, then it's really just a show, isn't it? It's not really a
opportunity
for the citizens to have any input.
I get that, and that may be another question at another time. If nobody had showed up at the hearing, they never did the proper notice, nobody was there at all, and they didn't gather any evidence. But the statute doesn't even, I hate to even say this because of course the district is going to consider evidence, but the statute doesn't even.
Difference at that second hearing, based on how you described the liability situation, the district is facing at least potential liability if it doesn't proceed with the sale. So that's not the same as a fresh slate hearing where there isn't that gun to their head.
That's right, but that's the statute that we're looking at does not require the statute requires.
If you don't give them the same procedural status for decision making that they would have had if they'd done it right.
Well, that's up to the elected board of directors or the school board to decide. There isn't.
Why is it up to them rather than to the court?
Because they are the elected officials that I do believe replaced the vote. This isn't a notice. When we go back to the legislative history,
What message are we sending to school districts? You can get the sale, sign the purchase and sale agreement, and then before you close the sale, send out this notice, have the hearing, and everything's fine.
Then you throw the bums out. If that's the way, that's the recourse. But also,
really important. It's the last undeveloped piece of waterfront on Lake Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Just throwing the bums out doesn't really get the taxpayers of the Renton School District back where they were.
But the taxpayers in this case are protected because of the appraisal. That there's an appraisal requirement that says if you don't get 90%,
you picked waterfront property because the whole body. Case law that says real property is unique, and you just getting the money isn't the same because you can't go get another one.
That's right, and that's why this statute provides the notice requirement so that the public can voice their opinion. It doesn't say, however, that the district has to consider that. It doesn't say that they have to listen to the public and make their decision based on that. Of course, the district would. However,
with the public or ignore the public?
No, I'm not saying they have to accept evidence, they have to hear the public, but the statute is more narrow than the appellants are reading it, and there is no obligation to consider evidence before a purchase and sale agreement or before the decision has been made.
There is no obligation to hear evidence before signing an enforceable purchase and sale agreement?
I'm saying in this statute, no. It says clearly that.
How does this statute really do anything if the school district can go out and sign a binding agreement to sell the property before giving the notice and having the hearing?
Because they can't sell it until 45 days later, after not even having the hearing. What if people?
How's the hearing anything other than a farce? If the agreement can still be signed before the hearing. And is fully enforced
because the sale has not closed, and that is the case because the electorate
sale from closing
conditions precedent such as
meaningless conditions
no,
precedent
like no
to rain for 3 days
no not at all there has to be an exchange there has to be first of all it in the agreement is in in the record so we can see the conditions precedent that need to be met, but the sale and the statute says that the sale must occur. Case law says, and they use the word deed has been transacted. And in the BNSF, this is on point because they did have a PSA before closing, and it's the date of the closing that the court looked to be the critical date. And that's what they use and say, okay, yes, it was after the date of closing, therefore there was an error. Now, can we cure it? And yes, we don't get to that point because it was before the closing. And even if we did, the policy still supports Renton.
All right, thank you. I forgot how much time you reserved.
2 minutes, thank you. 16. Thank you. In the reply brief, quote the argument that the school district staff made to the board at the first hearing, which is we must, for the evidence, quote, against the sale must be heard and considered by the board. So the argument you just heard right now that the school district does not have to consider the evidence that was presented is contrary to what the district said at the time.
Well, if I understand, what I think they were trying to say is they could enter into some kind of agreement as long as it didn't close until after this hearing, provided that there had been proper notice in the newspaper. I think that's the argument.
No, the argument is, and we went through this in the first, the 12B6 argument. Their argument, and they said it on page 9 of their brief as well, is we can enter into a binding purchase and sale agreement subjecting us to damages before we even send out notice. The hearing would be, I described it as a circus, sham, farce, whatever it is.
Well, so I understand the argument. They can enter into the binding agreement. They don't have to worry about damages because after they have the hearing, they go ahead with the sale.
Which makes the 1979 amendment meaningless. And I would point out Section 3 and 4 should be heard together because those are 81 amendments. In terms of looking at what the legislature did in 1979, it is just Section 2. So, if you want to take a look at what the intent was of adding Section 2, 3 and 4 weren't even in existence at that point. In Lane versus Port of Seattle, I don't believe the question of whether there was a binding purchase and sale agreement or the actual deed transfer came up. Well, the point is the court in Lane went forward and considered the policy and the purposes behind the statute, just like in South Tacoma Way. That's what the court should do here. Trial court did not. We ask that reverse and remand. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.